Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
And love you so badly, I could.
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, December 5th, 2012, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the East Coast. And my name is Mike Sempervive, and joining me as always this week, the legendary Les Thatcher. And Les, how are you this evening?
I'm not bad, Mike. You don't sound a day older than the last time I talked to you.
A little bit weaker, though, as I've actually had a stomach virus in the last 48 hours, and I can't even complain about that because I heard Brutal Bob Evans, who's going to be joining us at 8:30, was on with Brian Alvarez yesterday on Figure Four Daily, and he was talking about kind of being sick as well. And considering I didn't wrestle seven 60-minute matches over the past week, I have nothing to complain about.
I thought you meant that because Bob was going to be on, you were being nauseated. I thought, well, that's a hell of a way to start with a guest. He's brutal, but he's
what,
not that brutal.
Nothing was more nauseating than watching Raw. I actually didn't get a chance to see it till a little bit before we started here, and my finger was working on the DVR fast forward button in short order. But obviously, the biggest news, I guess, of the week is the fact that CM Punk has decided to get his knee scoped. Was rushed down to Dr. James Andrews. Got his knee scoped, is out of the TLC pay-per-view coming up here next Sunday, I believe it is. And, you know, they decided to move the Shield into the mix in the main event against Team Hell No and Ryback. So, Les, obviously, this you know, they didn't take the title off of them, and they're more focused on the obvious match coming up with The Rock at the Royal Rumble, but yeah, it kind of throws a wrench in the plans, but it does get the Shield in there right away as a main event force. Just what are your feelings about that and what they decided to do?
I think smart thing. I heard somebody said today that Punk came out of the surgery and said, yeah, I'll be ready to take bumps tomorrow or in a week, or, you know, and they said he said he could wrestle on the pay-per-view. And I said, if the company's smart, he won't wrestle on the pay-per-view. I mean, to me, if Dr. Andrews says he can go in 2 weeks, then I'm going to wait four. I mean, to me, I prefer to err on the side of holding him out too long rather than, you know, compounding the problem, putting him back in there too quick and tearing that knee up again. You know, at some point, that whole macho thing becomes self-defeating, honestly, you know, at some point. But anyway, you know, the change, if that happens, and it shows one thing too. You know, we beat it over the head until it's dead, is the fact that they have no depth, you know. So I don't know what's, you know, what's really relevant. Their ratings have gone down. They've lost audience. honestly, Mike, I tried Monday night to watch in real time, and it's, I just can't. I mean, of course, my Redskins were on with the Giants, which made me want to those people in Atlanta may want to know who RG3 is before it's all over, too, by the way. Anyway, moving along, it's tough to watch. They're in the process of – they've got a couple people that are over. Both of them are hurt. But, you know, more importantly, the way they're trying to get other people over, I just, you know, they beat Kane and Brian in singles, and then they put them over in tags against the same guys that beat them in singles. Come on. It's just, you know, and without any explanation. I mean, again, the people on the microphone need to tie this crap together, too. You know, if you're saying, well, you know, look how cohesive they are as a team. You know, they are vulnerable as individuals, but they're strong as a team. Or, you know, they've wrestled so much as a team, the reason they got beat as a single is because it's a different pace. It's a different psychology. I mean, give a reason. There's no reason for anything. You know, it's just like the thing with Ziggler. I think right now, if he were to lose the damn briefcase, it might make more sense, and then let him come back and get him started between now and the Royal Rumble. Don't wait till the day before or the week before, but start building him back. Do some video packages with him. Maybe maybe find his Steamboat to work out. You know, hey, Ziggler, he went to Florida to work out with Ricky Steamboat, or he went, you know, some reason that he's trying to sharpen his game because he's really pissed now that case is gone. And bring him back in the lane, win the Royal Rumble if you want to get him over. But kicking his ass every week, I'm not sure exactly where that's supposed to go. I mean, I try, I honestly do, but I don't see any value in it.
No, and I don't think anybody else does. I'm really glad you said that, too, because, I sooner or later, because they haven't done it yet, the guy who won Money in the Bank was going to fail on his cashing in attempt. And I think Kennedy, you know, when he got into all that mess after Signature Pharmacy and they thought he was hurt, he lost his, there was a little bit of a different situation there. But with how they've been beating Dolph Ziggler and the past 2 weeks before this one, where it looked like they were rehabbing him and he's going to be taken seriously again, then he loses to Cena, and it's like, you know, he's better off. He really would be better off losing that thing, splitting from Vicky Guerrero, which is, I think at this point ridiculous, and, you know, drop the crappy, you know, half shirt that a 13-year-old girl would wear and some of that nonsense, and, you know, put him in a, you know, rebuild him to be in a better position, and especially now with Punk's injury, this again should really be giving them pause to go, you know, again, we are incredibly weak. We are incredibly thin. And I guess for me, if there's any plus that comes out of this, it's we're going to get to see, you know, Seth Rollins, and who knows how this match is going to be structured. And obviously it's a TLC match, so it's kind of messy, but I'm hoping Rollins and Ambrose can make a very noticeable impact right off the bat here. And because it's WWE, God knows, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do with these guys, but hopefully for their sakes, they stand out. I don't know about Roman Reigns. I don't, you know,
well, you know,
the other two, you know, can go.
The one thing I'm going to say is, first of all, these three guys are fresh. They haven't screwed the pooch yet. Right. I mean, they haven't screwed it up yet. So that's a plus. They have a good look. I mean, the visual on the all three of them, Reigns, regardless of his, experience level, they can hide that between the other two guys. But they have the look, you know. It's like the three-man band, which I think must have broken up already, which is fine. They were together about 4 minutes longer than they should have been anyway. But, I mean, they didn't look like what they were perceived as supposed to be. These guys, you know, have a visual. And so if they don't screw it up, they're going to be of value. But again, they've got opposed to just the three of them, beating somebody up. They individually or as a tag team or something, they have to prove that they belong to, or the writers have to allow that to happen. If they don't, then we're right, you know, you're right back to square one again. That's the crazy thing. The one thing that drives me crazy is your managing supervisor, is that what she is?
Acting something.
Yeah,
like that.
Or whatever. Anyway, the guy who they took out of power whenever they took Vince out of power, is now in front of the cameras and where the board of directors, of course, I don't think the board of directors ever watches their product, but now
well,
he's putting words
into all those meetings when the show's on.
Yeah. Well, she's, she's just a puppet for Vince, which, it's just stick it. How many inept people have been in that position? And, it's like a revolving door. Let's go to the psych ward at the local hospital and recruit a general manager. It's dead in the water. I mean, it's not funny. It's not, it's like, come on, I don't know if you ever watch on ESPN when they get ready for the Sunday morning, the countdown for football. They have some segments where Chris Carter Kishan say, come on, man, where something just doesn't look right. And I watched 3 hours of come on, man, right?
God's honest truth. It's just, we talked about this before a zillion times, and everybody knows it. They even know it. They have to know it. 2 hours was too long for a lot of this.
Yeah,
90
yeah.
minutes is still the best, but 2 hours, fine. But three, it drags on for so long. And it's like that one segment with Vicky, where I felt so bad for her. It was like that 3 minute segment that just, Dolph was in, and she was yelling at Charles Robinson for God knows what reason. And Cena came in, and Paul Heyman, they had this 40-second stare down, and it's like, it's stuff like this. Like this, you're filling time with this stuff, and it's my God, it's not good.
It's
not good.
My thing with that, Mike, because God knows I obviously have never produced at that magnificent a level, but producing is producing. If that is a pre-taped segment, and I'm assuming that it is, if you're watching that on a monitor or you're playing it back before I let those people go there, wherever it is they're going to go and do whatever it is they have to do afterwards. If I've seen this and it doesn't work for me, we're going to do it again. That pregnant pause, the stare down, I'm thinking, what the hell, what's the value? It becomes, again, I thought there were, some decent athleticism on the show Monday night. The matches weren't, there were some decent matches, but it's the filler that is just god-awful and hard to digest. And in 3 hours, as magnificent as my friend John Cena is with Make-A-Wish and public relations, he'll never get an Academy Award nomination or an Emmy or anything else for that. I mean, it's just, it's just bad.
Especially him and Sheamus, too, chuckling it up after after the first segment as well, too, where the Shield goes and lays out Bryan and Kane, and then it's chuckles time in the back. But actually, we'll throw it to the break right here and come back, because I want to get into this a little bit more. And also, one of the nicer things that has come in the last couple of weeks, which is kind of the solidification of Antonio Cesaro, which is a good thing for their future, too, I believe. But be right back with that on Ringside Wrap.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling Television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first party you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow's glistening. A beautiful sight, oh, we're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, and the holiday spirit Rich Tate is, and back with the legendary Les Thatcher. And
bah, humbug.
Just hearing that commercial a little bit ago, I just, you know, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to book Scott Steiner for your bat mitzvah, you can go ahead and do that.
Okay.
back to Raw this past Monday night, though. They did that four-way match where Wade Barrett and Antonio Cesaro, who, you know, truly are the, you know, can be and should be the two of the futures of that company, and I was kind of nervous. You know, Barrett's always been in good standing there. Cesaro's one of those guys where it's like, oh, geez, you know, they could give him something stupid. Are they going to be able to stick with him and behind him? And they look to be doing that, and I think he's gotten more and more reaction as the weeks have gone on. He's been in a better position, and you know, obviously working with R-Truth, it's not obviously the greatest matchup in the world, and it's not being presented that way, but Ron Killings has been doing this for a long time. He knows the quote-unquote WWE style and things like that, too, so I can see in some ways how it is probably helping Cesaro, but they've looked to really solidify him, at least to me for right now. You know, obviously, things could change in a heartbeat with WWE, but as far as Cesaro goes, how do you think they've used him so far, and what do you think his future prospects are right now?
Well, you know, I'm glad they ditched a girl. Because I don't think that was, I mean, Claudio can get over, again, if they allow it, you know. Realize that Ricky Steamboat or Ric Flair or Harley Race, if a territory decided to use them and not get them over, as talented as they were, they'd have played hell getting over, you know. I mean, depending on what, you know, how they were utilized and who they worked with and what the ending of the matches and so forth and so on. So, you know, it comes back to, Pizarro, you know, he's got the talent. It's just that they continue to push him. One of the problems I think, Mike, is how many times has Del Rio and Sin Cara wrestled? How many times is Cena and Ziggler going to wrestle? How many times do the primetime players and Team Hell Yeah? It's like we're not talking about classic Buddy Rogers, Pat O'Connor, Steamboat and Flair here, right? I mean, and then you want me to pay for it on the other end of that. What is there to pay for? You've given me these guys umpty-ump times. They're not, I mean, the matches aren't that, it's not like, you know, they've had four matches and all four are totally different. And actually, there's no reason for them to be wrestling one another anyway, except somebody kissed her girlfriend or patted her on the ass or something. I mean, but nothing with substance. That's my point, I guess. You know, no substance to it. No reason. Well, it was like, excuse me, Miz coming out, who is not getting over as a great baby face.
No.
the whole thing with him, and I'll challenge you to a lie detector test. What? Let's play Scrabble. I mean, what the hell?
You really? Yes.
And if you beat me, we'll play Scrabble in a cage, and somebody will pay $50 to see it. If they're drunk or if they're nuts, you know, I mean, but you see my point, right? I mean, there's no teeth. Yeah, there's no substance in something like that. It's, I don't know what expression to say. It's not necessarily sophomoric. It's not, but it's just, it's not what wrestlers do. I mean, there are, you know, certain things that are established, and Punk wants to kick Miz's ass because he asked him to take a lie detector test. What? I mean, do you see me rushing to put $50 on the line for that?
Well, and also, I mean, it doesn't make any sense in the aspect even of Punk's character or Heyman being his, you know, kind of his brain and his, you know, shoulder, in that all you have to do is go, you're a geek, and we're leaving. And that's it. It's just,
well,
it's,
you know,
it was like,
when they threw this thing out, well, you know, and the whole thing with Vince, with Vicky being Vince's puppet, I'll say again, is just, it makes her look bad. And it's obvious who's running the show, so why don't you just let him run the damn show? But, you know, it's just, there's no, they have to give you a, you know, they put these people together for a reason. They just throw people out there. A few weeks ago on his blog, JR mentioned that Kofi needed to leave, something that, I'm sure I'm not quoting him verbatim, but something that, the effect that Kofi needed to leave his manners in the locker room, meaning he needed to come out and be a kick-ass babyface and forget the dancing and smiling and loving and, you know, they're entertaining, Mike, but it's not what, you know, the Shield will probably, if they are allowed to be what they are, or at least the way they started, they can get over, given the proper people, and they've got to win. I mean, you know, it's like this whole thing with Ziggler. The reason I want to pay $50 to see heel and babyface is the heel has screwed over the babyface, and I want to see the babyface get the upper hand. But since the babyface makes him look like a jackass every week, why do I need to spend $50?
Exactly. And you kind of bring up a good thing here too, leading into this. You know, this pay-per-view, and you talk about the Shield needing to win, and I'm looking, you know, as it stands now, I think there's five matches. It's Big Show, Sheamus, Kofi and Barrett, Cesaro and Truth, Ziggler, Cena, and then the main event, or what in theory, I guess, is the main event, Ryback and Hell No against the Shield. WWE obviously likes to do this, you know, we want them to go home happy thing, and very rarely do you get a clean sweep of heels. Ziggler and Cena obviously would be the one I would go, okay, well, Cena gets the win here because there would be other things I'd want to do with Dolph. But this to me also still would look like a clean sweep for, you know, the heel side. Big Show and Sheamus, I don't see a reason to make a title change there. And obviously, to me, Barrett and Cesaro both need to win their matches. So where do you put the Ziggler-Cena match? Do you make that the main event, or do you make this six-man with the Shield, you know, the end of the show to give it the most impact?
Well, you know, I guess a lot of it depends on the finish. See, they like to send people home happy. If they put the six-man on last, that's a bad sign, Mike, because that means they're going to send the people home happy, which means that Ryback and Hell No are going to win, and they shouldn't. I know I hate to make Daniel Bryan the sacrificial lamb, but he's the one, I mean, he's the obvious choice of the three that needs to get beat. But in some way, shape, or form for a finish, you know, Ryback and Kane need to be distracted in one manner or another, and they need to lay Bryan out and lay him out good. I mean, when I say him, it's not like I'm picking on him, but whoever they work with in this thing. If they're put in the main event slot, that heel team is more important that they produce than the guys who have been there. Well, Ryback hasn't been there that long, but my God, Kane's part of the furniture. And Brian's been there, what, 2 years now or maybe more than that? But anyway, you get my point. They need to if you're going to put, you know, but if you put Cena on last, you're probably going to get his hand raised, too, for the umpty-ump time. I don't, you know.
Was that the real reason, do you think, that they went ahead and beat, you know, had him beat Ziggler this week? Because, I mean, usually when they do that, that means, okay, they like this 50-50 nonsense, you know, a lot of the time. So it seemed that it would be, okay, well, Ziggler gets to win. Is there any possible way that it is the heels that actually run through it? Is that even humanly possible? Or that's just something they can't fathom? Because I'll say this, it is in Brooklyn. It's at the new Barclays Center in New York. So I guess if you're going to do that, you can make that happen, because I'm going to assume they're going to be cheering Ziggler anyway over Cena. But is that possible? And would you do that, actually, if you're in their position?
Wow. My only out here is Ziggler has to win. I mean, when I say that, you know, they did the whole, or the speculation was that Cena twisted his ankle to give Ziggler an edge, but then no one talks about his ankle anymore, do they? I mean, there was no mention of it Monday night. And so and even if he's hobbled, even if they've amputated one leg, he's still winning, right? So, which is even worse. You know, I mean, there's a time and a place where a baby face that appears to be in peril and you just almost giving up all hope of him winning, can pull that rabbit out of the hat. That happens, and there's a time and a place for that. But with this, I mean, you know what? The most surprising thing is if Cena made some wrong move, missed something, and took a bad spill and stunned him just long enough for Ziggler just to get on him and kick his ass, and I mean kick his ass, and leave him a complete about face. Forget I'm the show, I'm going to steal your girlfriend, all that gaga, and just be a badass heel for 5 minutes, and, you know, like dust your hands off and walk out and say screw you, without obviously saying it, but you get my point. And to me, that will start to get him over. But, you know, that's the other thing somebody's got to stop and think. How long did it take to get him in a position for us to be talking the way we're talking? So one win, unless he ends up decapitating somebody, is not going to put him at the top of the ladder anyway. You know, I'm not sure. Where they're, you know, right now they're putting a lot of bodies in there, and I don't know that, you know, who can draw and who can't. I'm not confident in those particular matches, honestly. You know, again, I think the Shield has to win and win strong. I think Ziggler should, but then that's two. If those are the two top matches, that puts four heels over and no baby faces. And for some reason, they're adverse to that.
Yeah, and then, you know, what that also does, again, it probably gives Kofi the win over Wade, which I wouldn't complain about. If there was the same Kofi that laid out The Miz, and it looked like when Ross was on commentary, it looked like for that second that it was going to be, okay, maybe Kofi's turned the corner, and that hasn't exactly been the case. Same thing with Big Show and Sheamus, and then the same thing with Cesaro, where, again, you know, Big Show and Sheamus, I guess you can flip that belt over and nobody misses a beat. Nobody will care about that and people will be happy. But I'd also assume that's going to be early on in the show as well. So I guess by the time, you know, that gets done, it wears off a little bit. But
you know,
I know Brutal Bob Evans is going to be calling in here. So we're going to throw it to the break here and then we can come
back.
Well,
if Bob's calling, then everything else comes to a halt.
You know, the only guy that has no theme music on here, by the way, which, you know, we need to get some 2001 for Mike Mooneyham when he's on, too. But we're going to the break here, and we'll be right back with the Iron Man himself, Iron Week's Brutal Bob Evans, when we come back.
Hi, this is Mark Anthony Ferrad, recording artist, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Music is one of the most important things in my life, but nothing is more important than life itself. So choose a designated driver. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
How I long to hear you sing beneath the clear blue skies.
A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Association of Broadcasters, and RAM.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi folks, I'm Ricky Skaggs. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it sure is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity, all qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your children to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that really clicks. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please, don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
I knew I was stuck at this kid's house for the night. I decided to just go to sleep and get the night over with. But those guys came into the bedroom and got into a massive pillow fight. Let me tell you, it's not easy falling asleep when a sweaty little kid falls on you every 5 seconds. Even after the lights went out, Raleigh and his friends stayed up. A bunch of them snuck up on me to try and pull the hand in a bowl of warm water trick. Well, that was enough for me. I went downstairs to sleep in the basement, even though it was pitch black. I left my sleeping bag upstairs, and that was a mistake, because it was freezing. I think it was probably the longest night of my life. When the sun came up this morning, I found out the reason it was so cold. I was sleeping right by the sliding glass door, and some fool had gone and left it open overnight. That really stunk, because if I knew there was a way to escape last night, I definitely would have taken it. To read more about the sleepover, check out Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Last Straw by Jeff Kinney. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library. And visit read.gov, brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, joined by me, Mike Sempervivi, and we are joined by our official fifth Beatle, the only guy with theme music, which is not actually even playing right now. I'm shocked about that. Cue that up, Rich. Brutal Bob Evans coming off Iron Week.
Did it ever dawn on you, Mike, that I might have changed my theme music to a more holiday-themed situation?
That, you know,
hey,
if you're well, if you're
well you guys
that,
are doing holiday music, how about a request here? The Drifters, White Christmas, best version. Believe me, doo-wop version is great. I don't know if either one of you ever heard it or not, have you?
I'm not quite sure. I don't know if I have. I've heard
well,
the
you need
one,
to go out
time.
There on iTunes or wherever the hell and White Christmas by the Drifters.
All right, Les, don't get hot. Jeez.
Well, I got to get hot, Bob. Jesus.
Hey, wait, it's been duly noted by Rich Tate, so we're definitely going to have it next week. So good.
All right. Perfect.
The first thing I want to ask you, Bob, is
yes.
when you, I think it was with Adam, you said we went 30 minutes before we went collar and elbow. I was
yes.
afraid to ask what happened in that first 30 minutes.
Yeah, we tied up in a bunch of different ways. We actually didn't hit the ropes for an hour, so that was...
Oh, okay. Well, cool. Okay. I thought if he was walking and talking for 30 minutes, I'm glad
no,
I
just,
did.
We just exchanged a variety of karate kicks and super kicks and dives, a lot of dives. And
a lot of Adam caressing his hair and looking at
you're,
the
you're saying that to piss me off, right, Bob?
Of course I'm saying that to piss you off. And of course you know I'm saying that with as much sarcasm as you would. So no, as but yes, guys, thank you for having me on. Yes, and yes, it's I'm still recovering, as you can hear. My voice is shot, and I decided that not being exhausted wasn't enough for me, so I decided to get myself and the whole family sick this whole week. So it's been kind of it must have attacked my immune system quite a bit this the last week. So, but I'm recovering now, and we're all doing quite nicely. But yes, it was quite a week. Iron Week was so it's quite an experience, and I'm glad I have some time to rest and recover from it. So,
let me ask between matches, what was your diet like? What were your meals like, Bob?
During the week or through?
Yeah, prior to a match or recovery after the match. Yeah, well, I mean, you had
a
match every day.
I kind of had a pretty loose diet that week just because I was burning so many calories, and I didn't watch my diet as closely as I could. Plus, I was on the road, and I didn't prepare as such. I know you'll whack my hand for that, but it was actually kind of a relaxed diet. So I put a lot of time and effort into before, but not much into the during. I was more concentrated on making sure we had a referee, making sure we had my announcer, making sure we had the guy. Which was a challenge enough, as some of your listeners and you guys should know. Poor Steve Carino, I think, is still stuck in Virginia traffic from Thanksgiving. So, but we're I think we set the all-time record for shortest notice for wrestling an hour or less. I'm not sure. 20 minutes to Grizzly Redwood. So that's got to be some sort of a record, like because he was my week started on Sunday, where I showed up at the building at about 2:35, walked up the stairs at 20 of 3. I got a message from Steve Carino saying, "I'm still stuck in Virginia traffic." I said, "Well, how far are you away?" And he's like, "290 miles." I said, "This could be an issue." So I turned to Grizzly Redwood and I said, "I know you're supposed to go on Thursday. Do you want to go today?" And he's like, "Sure, I got my stuff with me." So 20 minutes and in we went and got rolling for Iron Week, so good. You know, kudos to Grizzly for taking on more of a challenge than he thought he would already take for the week. So,
what I was asking about the food was I was wondering if you carb loaded before the matches or you did a lot of sugar or exactly. You know,
I didn't really do much different. I didn't want to put too much, you know, obviously I didn't starve myself, but I just didn't want to put too much. I was having kind of a weird week where I was starting to get in my head a little bit, like, and I remember that's how it was when I did it a few years ago, too. I started overthinking things. So I said, let me just kind of eat what I usually eat and not worry about it too much. So I didn't starve myself. I ate a pretty good breakfast, pretty good lunch, pretty good dinner, the whole thing. But I didn't overthink it, you know, because when I tend to overanalyze things, that's usually when I get in trouble. So, because I, for some reason, with my mind, hypervigilant like that. I'll either not think things through enough or just think about them so much that I forget what they look like anymore. So I just, I kind of approached this with a little bit more of, you know, like I said, I prepared obviously, but I didn't over prepare. My life's so busy now, it's very hard for me to just completely focus on this. So I just kind of did what I had to do to, as far as putting the schedule together and all that. And then when the end of the week show fell apart, that was actually a big, as far as responsibility goes, that was a big weight off my shoulders on that end. I still would have rather have done it, but I didn't get a chance to do it in my hometown the way I wanted to. We couldn't make that work. So after that, it was kind of just getting to the school, having the matches, and getting out of there, because it wasn't like we were texting each other back and forth, hey, what spot are we going to do in the 17th minute, and then in the 26th minute when you hit this, because I didn't allow the guys to call anything before. If they wanted to do a certain move, and it wasn't like I was being some kind of tough old veteran or something. I knew all the guys, but I just said, hey, if there's something you want to try, something you want to do, like you finish or something, I'm all about doing that. But aside from that, I don't want you, we're not going to chain a lot of spots together and all this, just because it's not what I want to do. And they're like, okay, cool. Everybody was cool with it. So nobody gave me any trouble. Nobody gave me any hard time. You know, one guy who shall remain nameless was trying to talk about it, and I just cut him off at the pass every time. I was like, nope, we're not talking about it. Just get in the ring. So it's not about, I'm going to forget it anyway. And it's just, we're not going to practice anything. We're not going to work anything out ahead of time. We're just going to go in there. So
I know you said you were tired and bruised and everything. Did you get any, sustain any injuries that were of importance? I mean, other than bruises or?
No, I had bruises all over my body. And I looked like I was shot by like a BB gun on my left side for some reason. So big bruise on my bicep. But aside from that, no, I felt pretty good. I got flu-like symptoms after that. That was probably the biggest injury, so to speak, but no serious injuries at all. No, thank God. So made it out okay. Everybody else, I think, made it out just fine. Vinny Marcellia threw up on me with 10 minutes left, which wasn't very nice. But so that's a big rib on me. He's lucky I have two small kids at home, so I'm kind of used to being thrown up on. So didn't really bother me too much, but it was something to make fun of Vinny about, so it's okay.
Well, Bob, we're going to have you on for, you know, a while tonight, and I want to, you know, hit each match. And I know you talked about it a little bit with Brian Alvarez yesterday on Figure Four Daily, but because we know you and you've been on before, and you talk about your kids and your family life and everything, before we even get into the matches, as far as you personally, you know, this past week with family, with job, with the fact that you had to coordinate things, with the fact you had all these curveballs, with all this stuff. I mean, I'm not saying the matches were easy by any means, but, you know, when you're in there working, that's, you know, in a way a weight off your shoulders from all this other stuff that was going on. How was it like to, you know, it's easy to hear you went, you know, you wrestled 7 nights and wrestled for an hour, but nobody really realizes the, you know, everything that takes place in your life outside of this. How was that, you know, being able to keep everything together and just being able to function knowing that you were going to do this for 7 nights?
Well, that was one of the stupid rules I imposed on myself, because when I wanted to make this a reality show, I actually wanted to have a reality show based in reality, which I know is, departing from 99% of all reality shows. But I kind of kept that, because I wanted to at least practice the reality show if I couldn't really have one. So I had to kind of keep my schedule exactly the way it was, which meant you can't miss any days of work. You can't take any vacation days. I wanted to do it where I kept all my responsibilities to my kids and my wife. You know, I mean, obviously I was going to be away at night doing the wrestling, but aside from that, I could still pick them up. I could still drop them off at school, whatever. We had a big meeting. My son is in the special needs department, so we had his IEP meeting, which is an evaluation, and that was a 2.5-hour meeting that I had to do. So we had to do that. So, I mean, there were bigger things than wrestling that I had to kind of stick with, and it kind of made it more of a challenge, which, you know, I don't know if it was smart, but it was a little bit more of a fun game, because if the listeners don't know, I have I have a full-time job, plus I run an eBay business, plus I do the wrestling on the side. So, and then I decided I have a magazine route that I do once every 2 weeks, and I decided to have line that right up with Iron Week too, just to mess with my schedule as much as possible. So, so I did all that. So I usually work an average of between 45 and 60 hours a week. So, to do that and then to do the wrestling was kind of like a big, you know, I don't know. It wasn't an F you to anybody, cause I wasn't mad at anybody, but I just wanted to show people that, you know, we can still do some pretty cool stuff with wrestling, and we can still challenge ourselves, and we can still do some unique stuff. And I just heard Les talk about, you know, right before you guys went to me and went to the break, you know, we were talking about, geez, we gotta, you know, if Claudio has time to get over, and if these guys have time to get over, and not that everybody needs an hour, but I'm just, you know, it's a way, and I know we're gonna get into the matches a little bit, but it's a way to give these guys a chance to show that a guy like Adam Cole, who's kind of known as a spot monkey, and Les and I know Adam really well, and we know that he's capable of a lot more, but here's a guy who went with me for an hour and, you know, was a little nervous in the beginning and wasn't feeling particularly well. In fact, now I think about it, maybe he gave me the flu, that jerk. But, you know, if he, you know, and then at the end of it, he's like, I feel great. I could go 5 more minutes. I could go 10 more minutes. You know, this is great. What a great learning experience. And just, yeah, I mean, Les, you know, Adam, you know, and he if anyone appreciated it, he did, you know. So,
yeah.
And it's just, you know, and then, I thought about it for a second, and I just kind of went over, and I shook his hand again. And he said, what's that for? I said, congratulations on going an hour without hitting the ropes. And he's like, wow, we did that, you know. And it's like, yeah. And I'm not against anybody hitting the ropes. And I know Les isn't either, by the way, all you people, all you Les haters out there. And there's plenty of them, plenty of Les haters, plenty of Bob haters, because we must be doing something right. But there's, you know, there's a reason that the ropes get hit. And it's the way I always explain it, are the ropes are a tool, not a crutch. You know, you don't just hit the ropes because you got nothing else to do. You hit the ropes for a reason. So, and I wasn't trying to not hit the ropes on purpose. It just, we just never got to them. We just never did it. We did plenty of other stuff. We did cool stuff, but we just didn't do that. So it's, you know, I'm real proud of the matches. I'm going to, you know, once we get them out, I want people to see them. So, you know, I think, you know, it might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I think it's going to be, I think they're going to be pretty well received. So.
Well, Bob, let me actually, you know, throw it to get this break out of the way here and come back and talk about it. And starting with Grizzly Redwood, you know, filling in for Steve Corino on the first night. So we might as well throw it to the break here, and then we'll be back on Ringside Wrap.
Let me drive.
How do you know when it's time to give up the keys? When your dog grabs your keys from your lap and your lap is on the floor. Yep, it's Jeff Foxworthy for Rad saying, when you party, be sure to designate before you celebrate.
If you want to make it home alive, let me drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Just please don't drink and drive. It's not fun.
Fairy residents, this is Tooth speaking. I'm sorry, did you say credit? Credit Fairy? Perhaps you have the wrong number. Actually, no, I'm not familiar with the Credit Fairy. And I know all the fairies. We're a tight-knit bunch. Why don't you tell me more about what the Credit Fairy does? Maybe it'll ring a bell. The Credit Fairy magically raises your credit score so you'll be more likely to receive better interest rates? I'm pretty sure there's not a Credit Fairy. But I do know you can improve your credit rating by paying bills on time and keeping your credit card balances low. Glad I could help. Me? Well, I leave money under children's pillows. Adults? No, kids only. But I do know a good dentist.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we're committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look at 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes.
All right, we're back on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and our friend Brutal Bob Evans. And Bob, talking about Iron Week here, and you started off, you talked about it a little bit with Steve Corino getting stuck in that nightmare traffic post-Thanksgiving. So Grizzly Westwood fills in on 24 minutes notice, and you go out there and you lose 12 falls to 11 with him. Obviously, you weren't planning on calling in anything until you got in the ring and everything, but did that throw you off at all with Corino, or because you had stress about him showing up or anything like that? I mean, how were you going into that, or did you just go, oh, screw it, this is what happens, let's go?
Well, that was one of the things that that was. I was a little, because I was like, "Geez, if we can't get this first one done, then that pretty much messes up the week." So I thought about it and I said, "Well, I know Delirious is out of town, which is one of the reasons why he couldn't do the Iron Week deal with me this week." So I said, "I think Grizzly's opening up. So if Grizzly's opening up, then maybe he'll do it." Now that was the only thing. If Grizzly wanted to do it, or if he had to be somewhere, or if he was just going to open the gym and leave or whatnot. So, but he jumped right in and he took over. And I, you know, like I said, it made life a lot easier. And by the way, just a trivia note, it was the only one we had actual corner man. I had Rocco Bruzzi in my corner and Grizzly had Rhett Titus, who was quite entertaining for the hour. But that was the only one we had corner men. So I remember the one I did in 09, we had corner men every night. But this one, we didn't have corner men the rest of the week. So it was kind of a different dynamic. But it was good. Grizzly did great. He has an amateur background, so he did some shoot stuff with me, which is great. He's a small guy, obviously, very small guy. So it was actually one of the ones I was a little nervous about because of the size difference. So it was kind of nice to get it out of the way, to get it out of the way early, because we didn't have time to build up and think about, the size difference and all that. And we just made it work, you know? So he's a pro, and hopefully I'm a pro, and I think we turned it into something pretty entertaining. So the only problem was the timekeeper was a young man who had never done this kind of thing before, and after you do a fall, the 30 seconds, you have a 30-second rest period, but it's a continuous clock. The 30-second rest period is part of the match. So the young man that was timing us actually stopped the clock every time there was a pin. So we ended up going 70 minutes instead of 60. Because I said, geez, I'm having a good time, but this seems like it's dragging a little bit. But it ended up being just fine. So and I knew once I got through the first one, I'd be okay for the rest of the week. So, but yeah, it was good. You know, it was 280 miles down there to do the deal. And we hit some of the same traffic actually coming back that Steve had hit, so I knew it was legit. So, you know, we hit some of it going from Pennsylvania into New York and New Jersey. So,
well, St. Grizz couldn't have done it. Now, I know you've worked with Rocco for a long time, but he's, you know, still relatively young and figuring his things out. And Rhett's obviously got a little bit of primetime experience with Ring of Honor, but
right.
St. Grizzly couldn't have done it. Would you have done it with one of those two guys?
Yeah, I just would have had to make it work. I just would have had to. I mean, there's nothing else you really can do. You know, Les was, 10 hours away, so I don't think he would have been able to make it. So I would have.
Hey, you could go get Buddy Landell's old broomstick that he used that one time.
Well, yeah, it's true. I guess you could do that, but.
I couldn't go 10 minutes, never mind 60.
Oh,
Todd Sopel was the next night. I know you've talked about. Well, actually, let me get back to Grizzly too, because I don't know if I said this on the air. If we were talking off the air, where I actually said I thought this was going to be one of those things when people saw that Grizzly Redwood went 60 and saw the match, they're going to see, you know, a lot more than what they've seen of him in Ring of Honor and the way he's kind of been and, you know, the way he's been portrayed. You know, for him, and then for the next night, Todd Sopel, who, you know,
yep.
You like to say has been a, you know, was a laughing stock in the New England scene, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but, you know, dropping the weight and getting serious and going to better trainers, you included, obviously. You know,
and Les, as a matter of fact, Les, he went to Les's camp when Les came up here. So he was a guy, like I said, a guy who makes an investment in his future. So.
Well, so those two guys in different ways, you know, I think people are going to see the 60 with Grizzly and go, wow, you know, I think this, they could do more with him than what they're doing. And then with Todd, it's like, well, you know, it's a young guy who got to really accomplish something. Now, you know, obviously this match went 60, and you actually went to a draw with Todd 13-13 as far as falls go, which actually kind of surprised me there. But, you know, two guys who, again, both 60-minute matches, sure, and both guys who people may get to see in a different light. But, you know, the differences between the two and then, you know, moving over to Todd, what do you think this is going to do for him?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, and Todd's a great guy. And like I said, he's been kind of like my whipping boy, but with a happy ending at the end of the deal, because Todd's a guy I point to where he was a laughingstock in New England, and he was a big heavy kid who was practically a backyarder. And then when he got serious about it, he dropped 100 pounds and started wrestling better shows, and would go to all the seminars, go to the Ring of Honor seminars. And when Les came up, he went to Les's the seminar in New England, and you know, he just put a lot of more investment in himself. He got himself a personal trainer. He joined the gym. He does some of the same things I do and does some different things too. And here's a guy who, he wouldn't have even been on the top 100 list, and he made my top 10 list. And when there was a couple people that banged out, I said, well, I guess Todd's going to be the guy, you know. And again, it was, it was a little choppy in the beginning, but once we got into it, I thought Todd did really well, you know. So, and it was, that was actually, we did a couple at Brian Fury's New England Pro Wrestling Academy, and we had a pretty good audience for both of them. We had probably about 30 or 40 people watching, just as kind of a student exercise for the two matches. So,
did you find, when you worked with the younger guys, that they were a little uncomfortable doing 60 minutes with not laying something out in the back?
Well, yeah, Grizz really didn't have a problem with it because that's kind of how Delirious trains as well. Delirious will just grab you and wrestle you for half an hour. I've seen it. So, I mean, that's I think you'd really like his training less. I think he's a really good trainer. And I'm like you. I don't throw that around too often. So, as far as Todd goes, yeah, Todd was probably the most hesitant out of the whole week. Because he had never really been put in that position. And I think he was much more deferential to me in the match, if you know what I mean. Like, he was waiting for me to cue him on a lot of stuff. Because there was a lot of talking during the match, just nothing before. And I just, I didn't always tell him something right away. I wanted him to come up with some ideas, too. And I think it took him a little while to get into the swing of things. And once he did, it was a lot better, you know, but I think for Todd, it was much more of an achievement just to get through it and, you know, represent himself well. And, but as far as the rest of the week, I'm just thinking, everybody else was pretty fairly confident, you know. Biff Busick on Thursday, we had to do some talking because I think he was the one that came in with probably the least idea of it, but again, he had 2 days' notice as well, so I'm not going to pick on him. And he had never wrestled me before, too. So congratulations.
Who is that?
He wrestled me for an hour. His name is Biff Busick. He's he trained in New England, but then he went up and trained with Lance for 3 months too. So he and then he went and trained with Funaki in Texas for a while, and then he came back home. So real good kid, very well put together. Good physique, good intensity. But he had never done that before, and he'd never wrestled me. So he was the only one that I had never wrestled out of all the whole group. So,
Yeah, Julian. So
you were you a little uncomfortable with him?
Yeah, it took us a little while to get that one going, but once we got it going, it was good. And plus, I enjoy that as long as it looks okay. I don't mind a little rough and tumble, making it look like a struggle. I think that helps protect the business. I think it makes it look a little different too. So.
Julian Starr, you had a night three, who's, you know, another guy, young guy from New England who, you know, people have seen him or, you know, the relatively high on and you know, he's got a long way to go, but he's got seemingly has a future. Was this the first time he was ever in anything like this? And how much of it was an adjustment for him? Because I think he's had more experience than Sopel and stuff like that, but you know, how did he react to the 60 minutes, and how was he? Was he, you know, hyper, or did he just kind of follow you? How'd that go?
Well, Julian was hurt. He actually had a lower back issue before the match, so we were just worried about stretching him out and warming him up. Once we got going, he said it didn't bother him, so that was good. I think the world's Julian. I think he's a really, really talented kid. He's done some work on WWE, and he's done really well for himself at the Ring of Honor camps. I'm hoping that we pick him up and do something with him. I think this is all due, complete 100, all due respect to everybody, 100% respect, but I think that was my favorite match all week.
What happened to Mondo that he couldn't do it?
Mondo broke his leg at the last pay-per-view.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He broke his he's a moron. He broke his leg with Bennett, the easiest guy in Ring of Honor to work with, but it wasn't – Bennett didn't do anything. He caught his foot on the lip of the mat outside, and when he took a bump, his foot stayed, I guess. So that was the deal. So,
wow.
Mondo was so I lost Mondo, Delirious, and Carino over various things through Iron Week. So, but as far as Julian, yeah, he was. It ended up being a really, really good match. It's probably my favorite match all week. And like I said, I think the world of that kid. And he's a cocky son of a gun too. He's a really nice kid, but he's super cocky. And it was really funny at the end of the thing because I've never seen him so humbled. And I'm not saying it was because of me. I just think he was humbled by the whole process and the whole, you know, I think it just brought him to reality of like, hey, we did something special. And, you know, it's a really cool thing that we did. So he was, that was probably my favorite match. And the next night with Mr. Cole was probably my second favorite match. because, like I said, less you know, you know how I feel about Adam, and you know how, and of course how much I appreciate his improvement and his talent, and you know, like I said, we had a really good match, and then he just you know, was very appreciative and humbled by the whole process as well, and you know, just obviously just, you know, gave me too much credit for it, but just, you know, like I said, that was one of my favorite matches too. So I, and like I said, Adam's a guy who I think gets lumped in with some of the other quote unquote Ring of Honor style guys. And I don't think he deserves that, because I think he's, there's much more to Adam Cole than that. So,
you know, I bet for a couple of these young guys, 60 minutes is like throwing ice water on them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because, you know, let's face it, I mean, with a lot of the indie guys, 10 minutes is a long match, you know, and for them to have to think about what's going on. But I'm assuming that you called the majority of everything.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, everybody had really good ideas. The guys that put in stuff, everybody had good ideas. I mean, there was some times where you say no, and obviously not yet, or, the, you know, do you want to – there were times when I would lose a fall, and then I'd answer back right away. And then there were times where I'd lose a fall, and it wasn't time to answer back right away. You know, we'd let it go a little bit, or we'd do a little false finish out of it and get cute with it. You know, and then I kind of did a couple of twists and turns off of my match with Adam from Providence that I sent you. You know, I was trying to do like little – I wanted – because that was always what I appreciated. If I had seen like two or three house show matches in a row from Boston, we used to get the Boston matches all the time. And if guys would do little swerves off of stuff that they did in the match before, I'd really appreciate that. I'd be like, I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but I did, you know? So I hope they know that I noticed it, you know? So I always like to do little things like that to kind of keep everybody on their toes. But and you mentioned walking and talking before, which I was completely not offended by at all, but we really didn't have anybody to walk and talk to, because there was nobody really there. So Adam and I played it. We just talked to each other through the whole thing I mean, we didn't call the match in a conversational way, but we talked like it was almost like an exhibition, like, oh, you got me on that one, well, I'm gonna get you on this one. I kind of kept it fairly babyface, because I just couldn't figure out a way, and it's maybe just because I'm not good enough, but I couldn't figure out a way how to lay a 40-minute heat on somebody. that's a lot of comebacks. So I just and Brian picked on me, because I guess he said that was one of his 60-minute matches with Tim Flowers, is that Tim put 55 minutes of heat on him, and the last 5 minutes was Brian's comeback. But I just couldn't figure out how to make that work. So I just wanted to see. You know, the babyface heel stuff is awesome, and I think I'm a pretty darn good heel when I put my mind to it. But this was about the wrestling. This was about just having a really good match, and you know, we can put that stuff in. And I know it's important, and believe me, I'm not downplaying it at all. This was just kind of a little different thing. That's all. So
You know, you're talking about getting that kind of, you know, for a long period of heat like that. That's getting into Johnny Valentine territory.
Right.
And really, without a crowd, it's hard to gauge what you're doing anyway. I think that's something that you should mention. Working however long in front of a house, whether it's 50 people or 50,000, is far easier than working to an empty building. I mean,
right. You better have confidence in what you're doing when you're working in front of no one. It wasn't tough though. I mean, it was tough as far as you couldn't gauge crowd reactions, obviously, but it wasn't tough. I was like, well, maybe we're not going to be able to have the intensity and all this, but I think the guys really helped bring that out in me, because I think everybody wanted to do a good job. And plus I told them, I said, I'm taping this and I'm putting it out for free, because I could sell 50 DVDs or I can have 10,000 people see it. And I'd much rather have 10,000 people see it, because I'm trying to get some of these guys work, and I'm trying to get them a job, and I'm trying to, you know, let's blow out some perceptions of people. And you know what? I want to actually do something for myself too, where we can, you know, like I said, this is the longest audition tape in pro wrestling history, 7 hours and 10 minutes, you know? So so there was something on the line here. I mean, obviously we want to do well, and we want to make Bob proud, and we want to do well for ourselves, and you know, we want when our whoever watches this, they'll like it and all that. But we also might send this to somebody, or this might be seen by somebody. You know, maybe they won't watch the whole thing, but maybe they'll watch 10 minutes of it, or 20 minutes of it, or the last 5 minutes, to see if we can what that looks like. You know, you never know what they're going to look at. So, I think it was. I don't think the guys had a problem keeping up the intensity. And like I said, I think we did a good job. I think the sprint really helped too. What I mean by that, for the people that don't know, is the last 10 minutes, we don't have a 30-second rest period. If I put a hold on you and you tap out, I can break it for 1 second and just put it right back on you and get another fall. That's why the falls are so, in my opinion, the number of falls being a lot doesn't expose the business. It protects the business, because if I make you tap, what's making me think that if I break it for 1 second and put it on you again, that you're not going to tap? It only makes sense, you know. And we did a lot of submissions. I'd say we probably did 60 or 70% submissions rather than pins. So that was kind of an interesting thing too, because that's not something that you necessarily say, "Hey, let's do this." It's just kind of something that developed, you know. So
for those that don't know, the Drifters and White Christmas aren't old enough. What we're talking about here is an Ironman match is roughly what we used to, a Texas Death Match.
Okay.
The number
yep.
of falls is not important. It was just who could not answer the bell at the end of the thing. That was
This we actually did keep track of the falls, though.
Yeah. We kept track of them too. But the whole idea was I could have won 5 straight falls and lost a match.
Right. Exactly. And that was another thing that I took into consideration too, when people would, because there was actually a couple of websites that attacked me on that. They said, "Oh, well, he's killing the Ironman concept." And I said, "How am I killing the Ironman concept?" I said, if I can beat you in 10 minutes, how come the reality is I can't beat you more often as the match goes along if we're still wrestling at that intensity? And especially if there's no, all I have to do is break my submission hold for 1 second on you and put it right back on you. What, you could tap 4 times in a row. We didn't have that. We had a couple of guys tap twice in a row, but we had I hit a leg drop off the top rope on Vinny Marcelli, and I pinned him twice. That's how I won the whole thing. It's how I won the last match. So I mean, that's how it worked. I mean, it's the easiest way for me to say it is, if you watch it, you'll get it, because it's and everybody says that. They said, "Oh, I wasn't sure what you meant," but then when you watch it, you get it. And the sprint is usually the most exciting, the last 10 minutes, because I didn't want overtime. Because I think overtime, we can't have 7 dramatic matches that end in 7 dramatic overtimes. That would just be ridiculous.
Right.
So we have to have the possibility of a tie. But if you do the sprints, now it's like you have a 2-point conversion or a 3-point shot. You have a chance to catch up. You have a chance to, you know, grab a couple of falls. You know, like you said, Les, win 4 or 5 falls and maybe catch up, you know. And
sure.
It was never that far behind, but that's a way to kind of make it work. So it was, you know, I wanted it to be more like sports, you know, and I wanted it to be a lot more competitive without having, "Oh, it's 2 falls apiece, and now we're going to go to the dramatic overtime, sudden death overtime every time." I mean, it's really, if you're doing 7 of them in a row, you can't really have that drama every day, you know.
Right.
So,
well, you know.
Well, wait, hold on, Les. Let's get this last break out of the way, Bob, if you don't mind, if you, you know, come back with us here, because we'll probably be going until about 9:30. So let's get this last break out of the way and come back and talk a little bit more about that.
You got it.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the 2nd and 4th Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows, to watch the television product, and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the 2nd and 4th Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event,
We got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who wasn't under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Ding dong!
The best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and our guest, Brutal Bob Evans. And sorry to cut you guys off there at the end there. So, Bob, again, please. Actually, you know what, Adam Cole, obviously you figured this is going to be the match. If somebody was going to cherry pick one of these seven matches to watch, I think they probably, it would be Cole because of where his standing is right now, the people that would be, on the internet watching this. Was this the first match you decided to not hit the ropes with Adam? And, to that, was there anything in the back of your mind that said, okay, this is probably going to get the most eyeballs and to try to do anything, extra special? Obviously, the ropes was one if that's when you started it.
No, I'm going to sound, I don't know, I hope I don't come across as arrogant or above it all or pretentious or anything, but I didn't really put that much thought into it. I mean, not that I was being, passe or blasé about the whole thing, but I just didn't overly, I was worried that if I overly prepared, it would look stilted or choreographed or just wouldn't come out the way I wanted it to. No, it ended up... The last move I did to Adam Cole was a super kick back to him, so that tells you how unprepared anyone was for that, including Adam Cole. So, but it was, it really wasn't. There's a story that goes with the, and I might have even told this before, but there's a story that goes with me not hitting the ropes. A few years ago, I had like a vertigo issue with my eyes. I was having trouble judging depth perception. So actually, when I was working out in the ring a couple times, I actually almost went right through the ropes, because I had trouble with my depth perception. So at that time I said, well, let me just get away from using the ropes. And then I started studying a lot of different styles of wrestling and just got away from the ropes and then just never really went back to them. So I still use them, obviously, but and that issue, that vertigo issue was gone, but it completely changed my style. And it's the guy from BleacherReport.com that did a write-up on Iron Week called me quirky, and I'll be take that all day, because it's really added to, it's made me unique. So I'm not even sure if I hit the ropes in the match with Adam that I sent to Les. He may hit it once or twice, but that's just kind of something I've gotten away from, and plus in Ring of Honor, where that's used a lot, I think it just makes you look that much different. So it really wasn't anything that I planned, because I think in the match with Antonio Thomas, I only hit the ropes, I think he only hit the ropes once. So, like I said, it really wasn't anything that we overly prepared for or overly planned. So,
you know what, I'm going to say, there's a kid that, the gimmick in WWE was one thing, but he sent me a couple of matches. He can work his ass off.
Yep.
And when I saw him get misused in Ring of Honor, I thought, who's the blind guy that's booking this shit? But that's what he can work the ass off of half that roster and not miss
absolutely.
A beat.
And,
the thing is, too, and I know this doesn't matter as much maybe, as his work does, obviously, but he's funny. He's got charisma, you know, that a lot of those guys that are there, you know, it's just like, yeah, man, yeah, you're exactly right, tied in with the fact he can work his ass off.
Well, yeah, and he's, you know, and he's, you know, this works against him, but he's one of my best friends in wrestling, too, so. But he's actually been one of my biggest proponents of this, you know.
He's one of your best friends? Jesus, I was going to use him, too. I'll have to say
I know,
about.
Damn it, you know. Antonio Thomas, you know, he's in a weird position because he's not particularly super old, but he's had a lot of experience. He's been around for a long time, and he's done a lot of things. And now he's getting into the grappling aspect of it and the MMA aspect of it, too, and he really enjoys it. And he actually used some of that.
Yeah, he trains with MMA guys. I know. He told me that. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's actually used some of that stuff on me, you know, using some different things on me. So it was that was a lot of fun, too, you know, just like I said, Tom's been one of my biggest, catalysts and biggest, you know, proponents of this and pushing me for the past 3 or 4 years to really be the best I could and giving me really good, you know, diet and nutrition advice and working out advice. And you know, he was actually going to do the one in 09, but he got like a bunch of concussions all in a row. So we weren't going to put him in that kind of danger. And then he was supposed to do this one, and he was going to go train in Italy for a while, and then that kind of fell through because I guess it wasn't what he envisioned. I guess the money was there, he told me, because that was my biggest concern, that I wanted him to get paid. But he said it just wasn't the skill level that he was expecting. So he came back a little early, and he said, hey, now that I'm back, if you need anybody. And I said, well, I don't need anybody. And then Mike Mondo broke his leg, and I said, well, I do need somebody, so come on in. So... But, yeah, that one was really fun, too. That one was really enjoyable. And, again, you know, can't say enough good about Antonio Thomas and all the improvements he's made on himself. Here, another guy who's completely – him and Mondo have climbed out of the depths of hell of that gimmick, you know, they've completely reinvented themselves.
Can he have a Mondo-type year? I mean, Mondo came in. People wanted to hate him. They didn't want anything to do with him. And he just – he was just Mondo, and he made you either liked him or hated him, but he got a reaction out of you, and he really was living up to his end of the deal, I thought, in ROH and got people behind him. Do you think Thomas could do that same thing?
Yeah, I just think he has to be left to his own devices. You know, I just he's smart enough, and I think Ring of Honor is, and of course I'm going to – this, of course, helps me, so, you know, big whoop, but – Ring of Honor is in dire need of kind of those veteran guys, you know, and obviously Tom's going to do it a different way than I am, and Mondo's going to do it a different way than I am, but these are guys, and those guys have big-time experience, so, and by that I mean in the big leagues, so they could really help, you know. I don't understand why everybody on our roster isn't running to Mike Mondo, since he's the only guy in the entire company that worked the main event program for 3 months with Triple H and Shawn Michaels. You know, there's got to be some value in that, right? I mean, even if he had his fingers in his ears, something could have gotten through to him. And I know Mike Mondo, he's a guy who's going to soak up all that information that they give him. So, you know, when he says, this is how Hunter and Sean did it, I think we should all be kind of like, huh, what, you know?
Well, you know, say something about what Mike just asked about Antonio. Part of Mike, believe it or not, there are guys that get over with wrestling. And he would be one of, I mean, when I say this, He sent me a tape to look at a kid he was training, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with him as such.
Right.
5 minutes into the tape, I was more concerned with watching Antonio than I was the kid.
Yeah.
Because, I had just seen him, you know, with the WWE gimmick. So I had no clue what a good mat wrestler he was. And, here's the thing, Sempervisi, if guys have the patience and the knowledge to get over with wrestling, they can. But in this day and age, most don't. So they don't, and it's far easier to take your willy out and shake it and get a stupid reaction than it is to actually learn how to work.
Right.
And yes, quote me, please.
Yes, that's good. I like it. Take the willy out. But speaking of willy, William Regal... you know, when I watch him on TV, when he does his rare match, and granted, he does it great and looks like $1 million bucks doing it, but William Regal is out there punching and kicking. You know, I mean, they should give the guy 15 minutes to just wrestle somebody. I mean, and I know they let him do that on NXT sometimes, but the guy should be out there, you know, doing it all the time. And it's just, you know, it's kind of disappointing because there's so much more that he can add, and there's so much more that a lot of guys can add. It's not just him.
Yeah. So, well, you know, you see it once in a while, Bob. You know, when my old company, they had a cyber pay-per-view or cyber clash or something or other. Anyway, there was a lot of gimmick matches. They had a cage match, and they had a ladder match, or, you know, TLC matches and that. But the match that actually got over most of the crowd, intrigued them the most, kept them in their seats and watching, was Nigel McGuinness and Chad Collier wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them a while to hook the people, but once they hooked them, they were on board, and they went for the whole ride. It's just in this day and age, everybody's in such damn hurry, you know, and everybody believes their own, all this, you know, well, you know, people are going to change the channel in 15 seconds if you don't do 47 flip-flops and backdrops and this and that bullshit.
They're changing the channel now anyway, so.
Yeah, and you say, how many times, you know, I'm probably going to turn on something else because I've seen that 99,000 times to begin with.
Right.
So it's here's another rerun. But no, you know, I think that's the unique thing is to see. The crazy thing is for me to say this, but in this day and age, to actually see wrestlers get over wrestling is an amazing feat in the year 2012.
Well, I at the end of the. At the end of the whole week, you know, we finished up with Vinny, because I know Mike's trying to keep this on a timeline. So we finished up with Vinny Marcelli, and thank you for PWF Northeast for hosting us in the afternoon, allowing me to go in their ring before the wrestling show. Because, of course, dummy that I am, I decide to do the Iron Week, and then I have to wrestle a 25-minute tag match in the main event. So I'm a goofball. So, but we do the match, and then I cut a promo at the end, and I said, you know, you can talk about the greatest wrestlers in the world. You can talk about, and I kind of quoted myself on Facebook, you know, because I have no shame. But I said, you can talk about all the greatest wrestlers in the world, and I have so much respect for them. But in 7 hours and 1 week, a guy, you know, a 40-year-old with a weird body and a face for radio just walked his way into the conversation, you know, because that's how I look at it. I said, I just walked in and I just out-wrestled most of the people in the universe, and there's nothing they could say about it. When they see these matches, I think most people are going to be impressed. Yes, it's going to be a little dry for some people, because, you know, we didn't do crazy spots the whole time, but I'll stand by those matches with complete confidence. Those matches were all solid. They were all good. Sean Radican from the Pro Wrestling Torch showed up on Saturday not knowing what he was going to see, and he left with a great deal of respect for me and Vinny Marcellia. So I'm really hoping, and I called out everybody. I called out WWE. I called out TNA. I called all their guys pussies for not doing it. I don't care. I'm you know. And I said, Jim Cornette, you're on sabbatical. Come out of your sabbatical, and because wrestling just showed up today. And then I said, Delirious, I know you've kept me on the sidelines. You know, I've been a sidekick, but I'm kicking the door down now. I want to be a part of Ring of Honor. I want to wrestle. You know, because that's pretty much what I'm saying. This is, you know, I'm putting myself out there for people and saying I have a value. And these other guys, by the way, have a value too, because these guys were picked for a reason. And we can't just sit on the sidelines and go, oh well, I hope if I send my tape in that they might watch it and maybe they'll give me a... No, we have to sell ourselves in this business, and I don't think enough guys stand up and say, I have a value, I can do something for you. And it's not that I can do something for you, it's that I can help the team. Because like I said, I've always been treated really well in Ring of Honor. I have no issue with them at all. Hunter Johnson's treated me awesome. Jim Cornette's treated me awesome. The whole crew has been great to me. Everybody's been welcoming. I just felt like I got pigeonholed in one position, and I've been fighting my way out of it. I want to fight my way all the way out of it. I'll still manage Mike Bennett. I love managing Mike Bennett. It's super fun, and I love challenging myself and doing something different, but I also want to wrestle. I also have a value in that company as a wrestler, and if you don't see it after 7 hours with 6 out of 7 guys I only wrestled one time and one guy I never wrestled and not calling anything in the back, what else can I do to prove to you? So that's kind of my statement. So that's and it's kind of what I said in my promo. Not quite to that extent, but you know, I'm hoping that people notice this and they go, "Geez, there's still wrestling out there. There's still people that can go. This 40-year-old guy I've never heard of can do this. Maybe we can do it too. Maybe we can add a little bit of this to the national stage. You know, not necessarily me, but just do more of it."
Well, you know, here's the thing, Bob, and most of these kids don't understand it, will never understand it, because they haven't seen wrestling. They've seen showbiz. And the, my point being is that wrestling, you can sell wrestling, but
yep.
it's more difficult than selling the crap. And therein lies the problem, too. And I think it's part, you know, they should, and that's one of the things. When I had a school, that was the way my kids were trained. I mean,
yep.
period, end of story. You called it in the ring or you didn't call it at all. And,
yep.
You know, and Mike, for those who wonder, here's part of the deal. I always looked at it like this. We're all human, which means we're all subject to make mistakes. So even if your boss wants you to lay everything out in the back and you go out there and come up lame, but you can still finish the match but can't do the finish that you planned, you better by God know how to call it in the ring, because you got to make some changes on the fly. And if you don't know, your ass is in trouble. And so it's a tool that you may need at some point and may never need. But, you know, it's something we did six nights a week.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's the way I like to work. It's the way I like to do my matches. And like I said, for TV, you have 5 or 6 minutes. You have to obviously lay out certain things, and I respect that. And I want to make sure I hit my mark on TV and all that stuff, so I'm all about it. But when I'm left to my devices, let's call it in the ring, it's a bigger challenge for the guys, and I think it looks way more real. Even when some of it looks kind of, you get crossed up and things like that, I just think it looks way more real, way more competitive, you know, and I think it
yeah.
gives, and again, there's very few guys that are, see, there's everybody wants a job, but nobody's willing to do anything different. That's why I like these guys like Sammy Callahan and these guys like Ambrose, and they're willing to think outside the box a little bit. They're willing to do a little bit different, you know. Ambrose cuts a hell of a promo, and I know you've had some, that's part of your handiwork too, Les, so kudos to you, but he also can work. He also can wrestle, you know. If
oh, yeah,
like,
he's a good worker.
If you said, hey, go in there and get 20 minutes with somebody, he'd be like, why not make it 25? I know that kid. You know, I know the type. You know, and Sammy Callahan's the same way. He has a different look, different way of going about things, but he can work his ass off. You know, Finley.
I'll tell you what, Sammy has grown up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, believe me, when I first met Sammy Callahan here, he was the last guy I would have thought I wanted to book on anything, and he knows how I feel about that. You know, that was then, and now he's a hell of a talent, but he had to mature to do that.
Sure.
You know,
but he also had people that allowed him to do it. I mean, Finley said, hey, let's go 15, 20. You know, I saw what Fit called, quote unquote, with a couple of the guys in Ring of Honor when he was there. It took him about 48 seconds to call what needed to be called. What's your finish? What's this? What here? I do this. And that's about it. Take care. You know, that's seeing the ring. And that was, you know, I didn't see much choreography. They didn't need a dry erase board. They didn't need to, you know, I'm X and you're Y. And, you know, all things of which I've seen, by the way. So it's,
oh,
it's
yeah. I don't even know how people remember that stuff, Bob. I swear to God, I don't.
No, I mean, it's... I just, you know, there's. I think it takes some of the drama out of it, and you know, nothing wrong with doing a little high spot or something cool at the end or a nice false finish, but you know, there's also times when I think sometimes that can be leaned upon too much, my friends, leaned upon too much.
Yeah, it's over managed or over planned or whatever the hell you want to call it, but yeah, it's, you know, I've taken the stance in recent times that if I have anything to do with it, I said, you know, if you have to call it in the back, please don't do it to the point where I know that it's all been choreographed, for Christ's sake. That's the biggest problem, you know, is when you can
Absolutely.
Tell, you know, when you see somebody that their timing is off and we've called this spot and by God, I'm going to stand here bent over at my waist like you're going to pop me in the ass until you get to me. And who looks foolish? Me? Yes, I do. But
yep.
You know what I'm talking about, Bob. You've seen that crap, right? I mean,
absolutely. I've seen it plenty. I've done it. You know, I've done it plenty of times. I wish I could say I hadn't done it, but I've been as guilty of that as anyone else, you know? So it's, yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, I think people will dig these. I'm going to try to get them out as soon as I can. It's
Where
kind
can
of,
they, you got to put this, I mean, can somebody order this from your website or?
Well, no, I don't have right now. I'm just waiting to get the footage. It was taped for me. Someone was nice enough to let me borrow their equipment, and they taped it all week. So I'm actually getting the footage on Saturday. So hopefully I'll be able to go through it. I want to get the promo out first because the promo was pretty insulting to everyone. So we want to make sure we get that out as soon as possible and get everyone mad at me. And then I'll have to back it up with my, you know, I'll have to write checks. What is it? The mouth that the checks that your ass can't cash or whatever.
No,
it is,
don't write checks in your mouth that your ass can't cash.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that my ample ass will cash plenty of those checks that my mouth writes. But it's like I said, I'm real proud of it, and I'm not sure everybody's going to be a fan of it, but I was going for that Dory Funk, and originally when I read that press release to you guys a few months ago, it was kind of a shout out to Dory Funk and Jack Briscoe and Harley Race and Ric Flair and those guys that could carry a bunch of different guys and make it compelling and kind of give that feel. And I think at least I captured some of it. I mean, obviously I'm not putting myself in that category, but I think I captured at least the flavor of it and that kind of a thing. So I'm real proud of it. I'm real proud of the guys. I hope it comes across on tape as well. So,
well, let me say, I think that those guys that you did it to honor would be honored that you did it and that you thought that much of our generation and what the business has meant to those guys. So I think that's cool. I really do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why we do it. And by the way, speaking of honoring, you need to honor me with a critique of that match from Providence that I sent you. Because
you know what? I watched it. Now I have to watch it again.
Mr. Storm already checked in with his critique, and I'm still alive, so he didn't.
Okay.
One thing I'm gonna tell you.
You want me to tell you here on the air that I remember?
As long as I can still walk afterwards, I'm okay.
It seemed a bit disjointed to me in a couple spots.
It probably was.
Okay, I just check. I mean, but that but I'm gonna watch it again and I'll get back because I had watched it and I'm not gonna get into. We've had more crazy things happen with our family in the last 2 weeks that on top of the holidays and everything. But I will watch it again, Bob, and I will promise to get back to you.
Well, that would be great. I would appreciate it. I always try to take the good advice that you do and invest it into the future and try to add to the package if I can. So,
hey, send it to Tom Pritchard and to Buddy Wayne too. If Buddy hasn't already seen it.
I send it to Buddy Wayne, and Buddy Wayne, he calls me 500 times a week and never watches anything, so I don't want to hear it. he's so disgusted with the rest of Ring of Honor, he doesn't want to watch me. So.
Oh man,
maybe he's taking a stance of his mentor or the guy who he mentored, and thinking, well, it's not bad for what it was. No, I don't.
Oh yeah,
think
well,
Buddy's
you know,
not doing
long,
that.
As long as the guys had fun, that's all that matters, right? As long as
Buddy, if you're listening, I'm ribbing. I don't believe for a minute you take that stance, but.
Oh no, Buddy loves you. No problem at all there. But yeah, I already put the challenge out to Alvarez for next year. For Iron Week, and he's seriously considering it, so we'll see what happens.
Siskel and Ebert.
That's right. Siskel and Ebert. Two thumbs
up. I'm thinking about challenging Radigan, too, because I know I can beat his ass for 60 minutes.
Radigan's a big guy. I don't know. Radigan's a big dude.
That's you see, I would go back in the train. I know I could double leg. You know what? I know I could take Radigan. I've got to get back into shape.
Always go for the pins, right? Always go for the pins.
Wow, here we go.
Always go for the legs.
I'm buying a ticket for this.
You know what? If you got free tickets, you'd still be asking for your money back.
That's true. Well, no, we'd have to pay him to show up. That would be an appearance fee.
Well, that's... Oh, man. Well,
I can, I'll be guest timekeeper or something.
Oh, nice.
Now, what would Rich Tate do?
Rich Tate will be,
he'll be the sound
PA
man.
And he could be the production guy in the back like he is right now.
Yeah.
So you hit, I wonder if he'll hit the music. Oh.
Know your role, Rich.
Bob, thank you so much for coming on with us again here.
Oh, it was my pleasure, guys, and thanks for letting me.
One more thing before you go, big guy.
Yes.
You plan on doing this ever again?
If you ask me today, I'd say no. If you ask me in a little while, I'd probably say yes. I'll probably do it. And next year, if I do it, I'm making it 8. I'm building. I'm going to make it 8. So I might even do 2 in one day. So.
Ooh.
Yeah, well.
Maybe you and when you get to be Jack LaLanne's age, he drug 3 boats or something across San Francisco Bay when he was 75 or something. I don't know. Maybe you can do a whole day back to back to back to back.
Well, let me first you can watch these, and then if you still want me to do them, then I'll still do them. How's that?
Okay.
Hey, fair enough.
All right,
hey,
guys.
You know,
have a wonderful night.
Oh, you too, Bob. Thank
all
you.
Right.
And, you know,
Bob, always a pleasure, my friend. God bless. Oh, love you, man.
Yep. Love you guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. If you want to get this out of the way, before we went off here, too, tomorrow night, the guys over at Peach State Pandemonium are going to be talking about holiday cards, wrestling on the holidays, you know, Christmas night obviously coming up. That was a famous night we talked about a little bit 2 weeks ago. But they're going to be talking all about that stuff tomorrow night as well, and then we're going to be back next week. Not sure if we have a guest or not next week, but we'll be back anyway, and probably going to be talking about the TLC paper.
We don't have – holidays don't fall on any of the Wednesdays, do they? No.
No.
Christmas is Tuesday, right? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we don't have to worry about those things then.
And hopefully by that Wednesday, your team has already gone through the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, and you'll be looking at spanking Dallas again for the last week of the season.
I'm going to tell you what, don't take my word for it, but if John Gruden gushes when he mentions RG3, then it's all right to gush.
Hey, let me ask you about this, because you're a little closer, obviously, in the Midwest there. There's a lot of Colts fans. If you're a Colts fan, look, God bless you. I'm not going to say anything bad about Andrew Luck. Can't say anything about him or his talents whatsoever. There's not a shot in hell he's the rookie of the year compared to Robert Griffin, is he?
Nah, you know, I'm not a Colts fan. I was a big Johnny U fan when you know, years ago when I was a kid. Yeah, Luck's, you know, I don't know. There's just something, the way RG3 carries himself, the way he presents himself, he's far more mature than his age. I mean, he really is. And the fact that the veterans on that team voted him team captain, and he hasn't even played a full season yet, says something about his personality, doesn't it?
Big time. Big time.
Yeah.
One thing a lot of people, you know, they wanted to long people who didn't see Baylor only saw that Baylor put up 70 points. I don't think they realized that the background Robert Griffin had, the type of quarterback he was, the size that he had, the physical ability that he had, plus the brain. He got drilled. Well, he never had a playbook in college. Well, he seemed to adapt it to the NFL in amazing ways, if that's the case. And I was there for that Atlanta-Washington game. There's Dick LeBeau's defense in Pittsburgh really did a number on him, and it's only happened a couple times this year because, for all intents and purposes, he has kept the Redskins in every single game this year, and if it wasn't for knocking him out at the end of that game, he would beat the Falcons, too. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He is.
You talk about a hell of a guy who knows how to set a defense up. How about Fisher at St. Louis, who took the Niners to a draw and then beat them and the second time around. I mean, the Niners have played great football all year, except both times with the Rams. It was almost like they weren't even in the game.
That's absolutely right. I mean, that he is, you know, I've been surprised in Sam Bradford not putting up the numbers that he has. I mean, Amendola has been hurt, and there's been, you know, and poor Steven Jackson is just, he's such a horse there, but Jeff Fisher has got that thing really going in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got a little connection with, you know, young James Laurinaitis has led that team in tackles the last two seasons, I think. And then Howie Long's son, you know, is a hell of a young defensive lineman. So they've got some potential all-stars there, too.
Yeah, and Lord, I know they signed a new deal or extended out his deal. He's really good. He's really, really good.
And speaking of Laurinaitis, who graduated from the Ohio State, 12-0, and I'm tired of hearing you. Rich won't come on and talk to me here, but I'm tired of hearing that crap about, well, does Notre Dame really good? What are you ribbing me? They played a tougher schedule than Alabama. Now, will they win? I don't know. If they win, the defense will win it for them, I think. But there is that possibility. I hope all them people in Alabama don't put their houses on the line just because it's Alabama, the Crimson Tide.
I've always hated Alabama. One of the reasons I gravitate towards Auburn, which my father was Italian, and he came from the greater New York area. And there's one thing that ruled in New York as far as my Italian Roman Catholic fan. You can like anybody else you want to like, as long as you also like Notre Dame.
So, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, as a kid, going back to Frank Leahy and Ara Parseghian, you know, and the great ball players like a guy named Montana, for example, that came out of Notre Dame. I was always a big fan. And, well, you know, Brian Kelly's got connections here. He was the head coach at the University of Cincinnati before he went to Notre Dame.
Yeah, is anybody still, I would assume, still sore with him at all for the way that thing went down?
Yeah, they were. But you know what? I mean, he brought a lot of attention to the, Cincinnati for many years was primarily basketball, right? Huggins and basketball. And he made football, you know, important again. So you can be mad at him for the way he left, but he did a hell of a job while he was here. Well, D'Antonio at Michigan coached at University of Cincinnati. Now the guy that's there now, Butch Jones, he's being talked to by, I forget who, Connecticut, Arkansas, I forget, a couple schools are talking to him, but it's a stop. Well, Mike Tomlin, who's the head coach of the Steelers, was at a coach at University of Cincinnati, was one of the assistants at one time. So it's a good place to learn, I guess, anyway.
Yeah, but. And I don't think they'll join obviously God knows what's going to happen to the Big East and all these conferences in the next couple of years, but I could see the Big East and ACC almost turning into a basketball-only type conferences, even though I know Louisville's going into the ACC soon, but Cincinnati's got a program, you know, all the way around with all of their sports from how it seems, even – you know, some of the second-tier sports I don't know a whole lot about, but they are solid across the board, where if they join the Big Ten or the SEC or something like that later on down the road, God knows what happens to these conferences, they're going to be far more of a player than, say, like a Maryland is.
Yeah, yeah. It's, well, you know, it's not a large – you know, I tease – you know, I've got in-laws and stuff down in North Carolina, and talking about basketball, you know, they say, well – you know, they don't think it's too exciting that Xavier even makes the top 25. I said, Jesus Christ, you ought to see Xavier University. You could sit Xavier University's entire campus down in the middle of North Carolina, University of North Carolina, and lose it. I mean, it's a small school, but they are there every year, are they not?
So, they are indeed.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, you know, the recruiting's good. Something's good there. But, yeah, well, we had our third Pillman show was on their campus at the Schmidt Fieldhouse at Xavier. And we had people parking in people's yards. Well, I mean, it just, you know, it was inadequate parking, right? And so we, as much as we wanted to go back to the next year, there had been too many complaints to the university. I mean, it wasn't like the wrestlers or went out and did donuts in somebody's yard, but it was just – people that had tickets and were coming to the show and couldn't find a place to park because, you know, it's not a huge campus. But anyway, but I'm interested to see Notre Dame and Alabama. I really am. And what's his name, the defensive ace from Notre Dame? I think there's a good chance of him winning the damn Heisman.
Oh, I hope so. Manti Te'o, in a way, I really hope he does win the Heisman. God knows they hate giving it to defensive players. I mean, I think, Leroy Selman was the closest one. Ron Simmons, when he was at Florida State, was up there in the voting too. But I know that kid Manziel's really good. I'm not as big on the kid Chris Klein from Kansas State, but I don't know. I think if you had to take the best
player
in college
football,
I think this kid
has done more. I mean, let's face it, you know, the big knock on Notre Dame, well, they only beat so-and-so by 3 points, but they won. And the point is, the other team didn't outscore them. Why? because they have this great defense, which I think will, you know, again, I'm not saying Alabama won't win or can't win. I'm just saying that there's a very good possibility that, you know, Notre Dame wins and the defense is what's going to win it for them. So.
And Mooneyham and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's like, yeah, you know, they had trouble with Pitt and this and that and the other, but hey, for whatever reason, things have fallen so right for Notre Dame this year. Yeah, I know it drives a lot of people nuts, but if I'm Alabama,
hey, you know what?
I'd be a little worried.
Speaking of Mike Mooneyham, he listens to the show. I know. And when he's not on, I got a great gift, Christmas gift, Heroes and Icons, and I had said I wanted all the authors to personalize it for me, and Greg Oliver said, great chance, big chance of that happening, but by God, I got it in the mail the other day, Mike, and Steve Johnson, Greg Oliver, Mike Mooneyham all personalize it, and as an added bonus, J.J. Dillon does the foreword, he also signed it, so...
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, great Christmas present. I'm just getting into it. It's a thick volume. Have you seen it?
Oh, my God, yes. I love this thing.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. We had him on a couple of weeks ago, and I think you were it was Thanksgiving, so you couldn't be on, but he did such a service to everybody because there are names in this book and stories in this book like Steve Crusher Casey and a couple of the older, you know, African American wrestlers who, you know, nobody would really ever know because this is what history has done to them. He is single-handedly or everybody involved in this, and that includes you and Mike and everybody else who was interviewed and who was talked to about this stuff. Really is generating a piece of major history and a piece of important history with this book.
Yeah, you know, Casey, I had never known anything about Casey until I went to Boston in 1960 to learn the business. And Casey, Steve Casey had a bar on Mass Avenue in Back Bay. And I said, you don't know who Crusher Casey is? I said, no. but I learned real quick. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there that probably people wouldn't see or know about otherwise. Yeah, I think it's a hell of a historical piece. Absolutely.
Guy, yeah, I mean, everybody. I mean, just he, Bob Ellis, everybody, Johnny Powers. He just did an incredible job. So ECW Press, thank you very much again for helping to continue on with these books, Heroes and Icons, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, which. If people go to Georgia Wrestling History or to ringsiderap.com, they can see what we've said about it there and tell them how to pick it up, too. So, again, tomorrow night, guys, the guys over at Peach State Pandemonium will be talking about the holiday shows. And Les, until next week, sir, thank you very much.
All right, always a pleasure, Michael. See you next week.
Yes, sir. Everybody, see ya.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.